It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood.
Fantabulous Seafood Shed.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes. They have some great groceries.
Oh, they do that now.
Woo!
They do
what that. What you say. Yes, yes.
I hope everybody had a good New Year's.
And safe New Year's, man. I tell you, all the stuff going on. We're just sitting here talking about it before we went on the air about who's got this and who's got that and who's got the COVID and who ain't got the COVID and you know, and who had it and it bothered them and who went to the hospital and who didn't. And, you know, I mean,
yes. I tell you, still got to be careful. It's still around.
I'm still digging my hole in the backyard.
Yeah.
I'm burying 2020.
Yes.
I've got a truckload of rocks coming.
Yeah.
Put on top of it so that bitch don't get out.
You better pour some concrete over the top of
gonna
that. Don't
pour concrete over top of that. I'm going to make me a little mountain in my backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's, you know, it's just a little bit too much.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I tell you,
it's just been an awful year, though. And, I mean, all the sicknesses and all of our dear friends and, I mean, all the families. And I've lost three of my family. And,
Yep.
I'm talking about, you know, like brothers and sisters
and
brother-in-laws, and two of my coffee drinking buddies from the Liars Club is gone, and you know, my old pastor's gone, Brother Fred.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, come on, Lord, look, you said you wouldn't load much on us and we couldn't handle. I said, you got me bowed up now, baby.
He's got a lot of faith in you. Let's
So yeah, I think he thinks I'm stronger than I am.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Because whatever's going on, it hadn't reached my mind yet to this right.
Yeah, exactly. I tell you, it was a tough year. You know, and that being said, all in all, I think on our end, you know, we did okay for the year. You know, it was a trying year.
Yes.
But you know, I think we were smart about how we handled everything around UJ. We kept the doors open, kept going, kept selling vehicles, kept keeping vehicles serviced.
That had to be a real duty there to perform when you guys probably got 200 people out there.
Yeah, not that many. I mean, it's about 75.
Is that many? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's still a lot of people.
It's still a lot of people, and
that covers a big spectrum of families in different parts of the city and county and what have you.
Well, you know, and you figure those 75 people, you know, they go home to two or three more people,
sure.
And those people are.
Well, that's where the
people,
200 comes in,
and then you know you're getting into thousands of people that are
right.
interacting, not even counting the customers that are coming in every day,
right?
You know,
just,
so
you would have if you take your employees and their personal families, here you go, you probably 250 actual people, and then you start progressing that out, like you know you see vines growing in you know in a garden,
right.
And it just keeps moving out, and then you start hitting these thousands of people, you know.
Oh yeah.
And that's what's happened to the COVID. I mean, it's what's got it out there and why it's spreading so bad.
Exactly. It looks like we do have a caller. Caller, are you on there?
Hello?
Hello. What can we do for you?
This is Nick.
Hey, Nick.
The fabulous Nick DeMario. What are you doing, Big Daddy? I tell you, what had the chance to partake of some fine vittles over at the Fantabulous Ed's Seafood Shed over the weekend and over the holidays. Just really unbelievable. You guys are getting to be famous for one of your drinks over there, though, aren't you?
The Bushwhacker.
Yeah.
Yes, man. For whatever reason, it's cold, but everybody's eating the Bushwhacker. And I say eating.
Eating? Yeah, what's that deal? I thought that was a drink.
Well, we have signature Bushwhackers that we're doing actually a Bushwhacker menu. We did a Christmas Bushwhacker with a Little Debbie's Christmas tree in it, and people went bananas.
Little Debbie's Christmas tree in a drink.
Yeah.
And you're nibbling and sipping, huh? Sipping and nibbling.
We sold 700 of them.
Oh my God.
we bought out at Dollar General, and we just called a little Debian guy and said, look, can you sell us these Christmas trees? And he brings them to us.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, you're
so with that, Tom, when you in a restaurant business or in any business, you find this nugget that you go, oh, this is a hook.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we going to do with Ed's? We're going to continue the train on the Bushwhackers and just get all crazy with them. We got the Mardi Gras one coming with king cakes and
dang, king cakes. Now how's that going to apply? You there?
I was in it.
Sir?
Hello. Can you hear me?
No, we all just lost you, and you just faded back in. Come on, talk to us again.
I'm here now.
You here now?
We were talking about the...
Yeah, you here now?
talking about the king cake in the Bushwhacker.
Yeah, so the Bushwhackers are going crazy, man. And Jamie's having a lot of fun with that. You know Jamie. She's become a mad scientist.
Oh, yes. But, hey, she's an awesome manager, and she does an outstanding job.
Hey, 90% of what we do in our business is caring, and she scores all 90% on that.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's she was there when I was over the weekend, and she did a fabulous job. I had asked her about a particular food, and she said, oh, yeah, we've got that. I'll see that it's, taken care of, boom. And it was.
Well, we got three great girls there, including the whole staff. You got Casey Jones.
Right, Casey's
and
good.
And then Georgiana Williams, the chef.
Right,
they're
yes.
all amazing. It's not Charlie's Angels, it's Ed's Angels.
Ed's
Angels. They're all, they all can throw down.
Yep.
There you go.
That's an awesome job. Now, we had also a chance, we always talking about Ed's, but I had a chance to go over to Sunset Point. And I actually was over there yesterday.
That's the crown jewel.
Whoo, man. We went out on the back patio, and the sun was out, and it was beautiful. The marina was slick out there. I mean, it just looked like a piece of glass, and there must have been 100 or 200 of damn sailboats in the marina. And it was just fantabulous. And then she asked for some oysters, and they said, oh, yeah. We got a special, and what do they call it, an oyster pick? Is that what y'all call it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Undang believable. Man, that was neat. Now, what is that sausage y'all put on there? That topped it off.
He's probably using a little bit of Kanaka sausage.
Yep, okay. And then you had some sauce on there with other sauce with some tomatoes and stuff in it, man, a little corn. I'm going like, woo, check this out.
Yeah, Sunset Point is a very eclectic menu. We're going on our sixth year there that we opened that place up, and we do from snapper throats to grouper sandwiches to sesame seared tuna to mussels and the octopus and scallop salad called Leo's. It's just a really fun menu. The setting's really beautiful as well.
That's awesome. Yep.
A lot of chef-driven desserts,
yep.
But just a good setting.
And Corey, I think Corey's one of your managers over there, or she's your GM?
Corey's there, but Corey's fixing to move up the chain. She's going to be the general manager of Panini Pizza and Pasta.
Oh, my Lord.
Yep, so we're super excited about that, and we have some opportunities where we're just moving some people around, not because of negativity, just because of growth and upward mobility.
That's where they learn, man. That's where they learn, and that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That's neat. What else is going on? Anything else going on with the Big Ed's? We've got about a minute left.
Catfish.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about that. Don't you have some kind of hot
catfish?
Crossfish.
Over Rich and Greens with the Bama White Barbecue.
Uh-oh.
The group that does the tours over there in Mobile, and now they're doing Fairhope. They posted on their web that was the number one item this year that they chose as the best food item. So we were quite proud of that.
Oh, heck yeah. And what do you call it now so we can ask for it?
Just the Causeway Hot Catfish.
Causeway
we
Hot Catfish.
We use a domestic catfish, lightly fry and bread it, and then we hit it with a little bit of that Gulf Coast Mob Town hot sauce, and then we top it off with a little bit of white barbecue, and then serve that over some house greens and turnips, slow roast it, and then we put that sauce on top. So, man, it's just like every spoonful is a yum.
It's a yum yum. Nick, we appreciate it, brother. Appreciate you calling in, and we certainly appreciate you working with the show and your organization. You guys are doing an awesome job.
Have a good night. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
But, yeah, I tell you, Ed's always a good place to go get something to eat. There's always good vittles, no doubt.
Unbelievable.
But it sounds like it's time for us to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
That stock car boy, eat too much to believe. You know he always got an extra pack of cigarettes rolled up in his T-shirt sleeve. He got a tattoo on his arm, I said, baby. He got another one that just say, hey. Whatever Sunday afternoon, he is a dirt track demon in a 57 Chevrolet.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle, long time Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But anyway, we were, of course, talking to Nick from Ed's. And
Well, I got a couple of questions.
You do?
I know there's somebody out there that's got car problems. If they take the time to give us a call, and I'm sure the car doctor can handle it. But in the meantime, I'm going to ask him a question.
All right. Come on.
I have a friend that has I believe it's a Kia, and the ABS light came on.
Right.
So it came on, and they didn't think, well, you know, I'm going to get this check pretty soon. Well, they hit a water deal. It's a nice little rain we had, so that tells you how long the light's been on.
Mm-hmm.
But and it hydroplaned.
Right.
And it likely got away from them. And they didn't think that the brakes or the automated braking system was working properly.
Right.
Now, so then they went and had a person that's, I guess it was a shop. I don't know. I hadn't had that defined. But anyway, they said that there's no code.
Right.
So we don't know what's wrong with it because there's no code.
Right.
But then it said, well, we'll turn the light off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, wait a minute. My question is, and I'm asking the car doctor.
Yeah.
For it to light to come on and stay on for 2 or 3 days, it's got to have a code. Am I not right?
Yeah. I mean, it's first off, if they turned the light off.
It had a code.
It had a code in it.
Right.
You know? Unless they went in there and poked a hole through the light bulb and just burned the bulb out, you know, and that's how they
no, because
the
lights come back on.
Right? Okay. Right. So it's obviously it had a code. Now maybe their scanner was not sophisticated enough or had the right software in it to read that code in that particular car.
Right.
But could clear it, you know. So what happens when your trouble light like that comes on, especially like on a brake system, something like that, is that it will disable the analog braking capability, but you still have normal braking.
Okay.
So if your analog light is on, you're not going to have analog brakes. So it will lock them down, and you have to go back to pumping the brake and all that kind of stuff.
Now, you know, we hear all of these stories that scare you to death about, if you got to place an ABS module or system, it's $1,200 and all this stuff. How far out will, the signals go? I mean, do they pick up signals off the individual tires or rims on all four corners?
Well, I mean, and it really depends on the system with the car. If you have a four-wheel analog brake system, yes, it has a sensor on each wheel.
Could one of those sensors be bad and cause that?
More than likely, it's just a sensor bad. If it went out and stayed out for a little while and then came back on, it's probably got a bad sensor or a broke wire that is making contact at times. Just got to find out what code it is, and then, that at least give you a corner to go look at.
Well,
you know?
Okay. In other words, if a person has one of these pocket checkers and looking for a code there, that could or could not give you a signal that it has a code. But I would think that the main thing is you have to have somebody with the diagnostic equipment that can go deeper than just that first code number.
Right. Well, you know, what you get into is that most of these little code readers that your little part stores have.
Right, and, right. I see some online for $19 little, now.
Yeah, and those, they will generally check like an engine code. They will normally not check a body code or a chassis code or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So that may have been what the deal is, but sometimes when you hit clear anyway, it will clear all the systems on the car. So what they may have been doing was they were checking it with a little code reader. It couldn't read the code, but it could clear the codes.
Okay.
So
there is such a thing?
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm not a big fan of clearing codes you know what you're doing clearing.
I have heard you talk about it on numerous occasions on the show, that is if the light is on, it's got a code in it, don't clear it. Let the technician that's going to do the work on it clear it, because he needs to know all of the codes and that trail, electronic trail, that is there, so that he can more functionally and easily check to see what the hell's going on with it.
Well, and especially with like an engine code, it will give you not only the code, it will give you a freeze frame or failure record of what was going on when that code set. So
with the proper diagnostic equipment.
With the proper equipment.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, I've got a lean mixture code in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, was it under throttle, at idle, cruising speeds, or wide open throttle? Did it get lean? Or was it cold? Was it hot? You know.
But now, this frame that you're talking about, or in other words, or these codes, if you have the right equipment, you can go back and look at that, what happened on that second or what millisecond or whatever.
Yeah, and what it does, and unfortunately, you can't pick the specific data you may want to go look at. It just takes basically a snapshot. Okay, check engine light comes on, boom, it took a picture of, say, throttle position, temperature, manifold pressure, fuel trim numbers, vehicle speed, just some information.
All of the pertinent information, though.
The major information. Now, depending on what code it is, that may not be the information I need to see, but it at least gives me some idea what you were doing with the car when it set it.
Does it put you in aims you in the right direction and what area you need to get in?
Well, and that's the big thing. It, the code will send me towards a direction, and the freeze frame will tell me that, okay, I'm never going to get it to do it if I'm sitting in my stall, just letting it idle. Maybe I need to be driving down the road at 60 mile an hour for it to do it.
And you have specialized equipment for that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
It'll give us that information, and I can take a scanner and go drive it down the road. And if I have to, I can just find out if what's going on.
See if it does it again.
At that time and try and get it to reproduce. That's a big thing, within our business is reproducing, so it's not only a lot of this stuff. I may have a good idea what it is when I see the code or when I look at some things.
Did you get that for 40 years of experience?
And that's a big part of it. Yeah. But, until I know how to reproduce that failure, I don't know 100% that I've got it corrected until I can go out there and put it in that same situation and it doesn't fail. Yeah. So I like to be able to figure out how to make it fail first and then fix it and then go reproduce that circumstance and make sure it's going to stay gone.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's a big part of what we do is just trying to reproduce what's happening. We see them all the time. Well, my check engine light stayed on for 3 or 4 days, and it's off now. Yeah.
What are you looking for, and what does that tell you about that particular incident?
Well, and it tells me that it's not a hard code, which means it's not a constant failure. It doesn't fail every time you key up, whatever, because it has to pass the test several times before it turns that light off. And depending on which code, it's a different circumstance of what will actually turn that light off. Not all of them are the same. Well, if it has turned that light off, you know that it has at least passed several times to turn the light back off. Now, you may or may not have a code stored in there, depending on how long it's been off. So, you know, all you can do is hook to it and go in there and rummage around and see what information you can get out of it.
See what the computer holds.
Right. You know, because it can turn the light off but still store code, and then after a while it's going to wipe that code out of the system.
Really?
It will eventually work its way
out. Does that have to do with how many times you crank it up and turn it off, crank it up and turn it off?
Well, yes and no. It's more of what they call a drive cycle. So it's not just cranking up and shutting it off. You actually have to crank it up, go drive it through a certain set of circumstances, then bring it back, shut it off, and let it sit. Now, you may have to let it cool all the way back down, or you may have to just let it sit for 5-10 minutes and then crank it up and go drive it through that circumstance again. Yeah. You know? Because there's a lot of codes that one of the things that you look at, say if you have a code that sets, you're going to go in there and look at the description of that code and what causes what you have to do for it to run that test. Okay, because there's a lot of them that say there's emission tests that you have to shut the car off, you have to get the car all the way up to temperature. You got to shut it off, let it sit and cool completely back down, like 8 hours worth of cooling down.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first time you crank it is when it's going to run that test again. Well, if you don't know that, and you go in there and you fix it and you try and drive it and get it to run that test again, it'll never do it. Yeah. So you better sit there and read, you know, what you have to go through to make that test run again.
Well, you know what you just told me. There's no damn way that these box stores can go in there and read a code and tell you exactly what's wrong with your car.
Right, and tell you
this and what is part
it.
To buy.
What part to buy.
No, I ain't buying no parts on no
code. And you
got
it fixed.
At a box store.
So, anyway, sound like it's time for us to take a break, and we'll let you hear from our sponsors. We'll be back.
To St. Louis, Lord, I see her every day. A double-clutching weasel like me can hardly ever get a girl to look at him that away.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, you heard the story of the hot rod race that fatal day.
Hey, welcome back to The Car Doctor Show. This is The Car Doctor, Kevin Raywinkle, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But, we got into some analog brake issues.
Right,
there,
right.
But, I know you had some other
questions. Yeah, I do, but I want to go back to that just a second. You said you were specific about it. Sets a hard code.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Do we have different strengths of codes? Do we have a soft code and a medium code or light code? Or, I mean, what do we got here?
And what I said by hard code is actually one that just – it's a current code that comes back every time you clear it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's just, in other words, it's always there.
It's I don't care how many times you hit the clear button, it's going to pop right back up.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could clear it, but momentarily when you crank it back up, it's going to come back.
Right.
Okay.
You know, if you got one that's like that, it makes my life easy.
Oh yeah.
You know,
okay.
Because I can check something, repair something, whatever, and if it clears, I'm good.
Right. You know? Right. Okay.
Life is good to move on, you know.
Well, I thought with our listening audience out there that we needed to define hard code, and you know, do we have lighter codes or we have heavier codes, or you know,
right, right.
We have soft codes,
lightweight codes,
or we have hard
medium
codes.
Weight codes. Yeah,
but okay, all right, yeah. Damn a bunch of codes. Let's do something else. How many people do I really wonder that realize that most all of our fuel pumps now are actually in the fuel tanks?
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, and all of us mature people, I won't say old, mature people remember when the fuel pumps was on the side of the motor, and or they were on the side of the frame. And then they all had fuel filters, and they were usually mounted on the side of the frame. Some of them were up around the motor, but not all. And, you know, and they could be a fuel filter at the tight gas tank. They could be one on the frame before it got to the motor, et cetera, et cetera. All that has changed now.
Yeah. Well, come on, you need to back on up a little bit, because I know you remember when the gas tank was up on the top of the cowl panel and it was just gravity-fed.
Watch it now. That is real mature. But, yeah, I remember that. You sit in the seat and look out front, and you knew the gas cap was on because you could see the sucker. It was right there.
Yeah, that's right. It was right out in front of you.
Right out there. Yeah,
exactly.
That was on that A model, I believe.
Yeah.
My granddaddy used to drive. He let me drive when I was about six.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Ooh, that's been a long time ago.
But, yeah, it's, you know, and honestly, when they went to electronic fuel injection, most all the cars went to an in-tank fuel pump. We still had a externally mounted fuel filter on the frame rail. They have actually, almost all the cars except for the diesels have gotten away from that, and they've gone to a more of a pickup screen in the tank. It is called a filter.
In essence, it's not a cartridge-type filter.
Right.
Like we, back in the days, used to see just a miniature of an oil filter or something like that.
Right.
Where it had a paper packing and lining and all in it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that anymore.
No, and it's a multi-layer screen that goes on the end of the fuel pump that filters the fuel going into the pump. And then from there, it just sends it straight to the fuel rails. Now, well,
I've got about five questions that just come up from that.
Now it's, and I say it sends it straight to the fuel rails. Now that's, you know, we went from our cowl mounted gas tank that was gravity fed into a carburetor. Okay. Then we went to an engine mounted mechanical fuel pump to an electric pump in the tank.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. When we had the fuel pumps manually mounted on the motors,
mm-hmm.
those were pulling pumps. In other words, they worked off of a suction and sucking the gas out of the tank
mm-hmm.
and then feeding it into the carburetors.
Right, right.
But now we've gone to a fuel pump that is in the gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
So those are no longer suction pumps. They are pusher pumps, right?
Right. It's a submerged pump that's just pushing the fuel. Okay.
What are some of the reasons why they put it in the tank?
Well, they put it there. Well, for one reason is it's quieter.
Once it's in the tank and
it's submerged in fuel, it makes that electric fuel pump quieter.
You don't hear that.
Right. You don't hear it.
Like the little electric fuel pump pusher I had on my old Suburban.
Yeah. Especially when it vapor locked.
I knew when it was on.
Yeah, that's right.
When it's, you know, keep it from vapor locking.
Exactly. But the in-tank pump, it you don't have pickup issues or suction issues. It's submerged in fuel all the time. So
if a pump is going, the manual pumps that I can recall back in the day usually ran from like 3 pounds to 6 pounds of pressure mm-hmm. to the needle of the seat on the carburetors.
Right.
But now we're talking about 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, 100. Did I hear over 100 pounds of pressure to the fuel injection systems or something now? So that tells me that's a little bitty electric motor, mm-hmm. and that sucker's turning gazillion amount of RPM, so it's going to get hot.
Right, right.
So by being in that cold fuel, then that keeps that pump cool as well?
Well, and that's part of the function of it is to keep the pump cool. And now what we're doing is pretty much all of our motors have gone to a direct injected setup. So it's using that, you know, 40, 50, 60 pounds of pressure to supply a mechanical pump again on the motor. But it's and the old ones were camshaft driven. But this one is a high pressure pump that is taking that 40, 50 pounds and turning it into, on the diesels, as much as, you know, I think it's somewhere around 10,000 pounds of pressure.
Shut your mouth. Man, that'd blow the damn motor apart. 10,000 pounds, can you imagine that? That'd cut through steel.
Yeah, depending on, I mean, if you got a hot rod diesel, you can jack that pressure on up. Or, you know, our gas burners that have close to 2,000 pounds of pressure on the fuel injectors. Yeah. It's pushing that fuel directly into the combustion chamber.
Okay.
So it has to overcome the pressures that are going on in the combustion chamber.
It has to overcome. Okay. So if you got, 300 pounds, 600 pounds of compression in the cylinders, then that 2,000 pounds pressure would override that.
Right. Right.
And put it on top of the piston so that it would the spark from the plug on a gas burner would ignite it.
Right. You know, and it you can inject it directly into the cylinder. There's no wasted fuel that's sitting in an intake runner or
you don't choke anything down there or flood it.
Right. Yeah, so it goes directly in. It's put precisely in the place in the combustion chamber that it wants it.
Well, you know that's one of the reasons our motors are lasting. We don't flood a cylinder with excessive gas and go by the rings and get down in our oil and liquefy the oil and cause it to burn up.
Yeah.
Rod bearings and whatever.
Right.
Main bearings.
Right. I mean, our motors last way longer. They're way cleaner. It keeps the fuel out of the oil. And that being said, and we have one today, which is why it reminded me, come in with rich codes on both banks.
Now, it'll actually define the bank of the right side or left side of the motor?
Right. Bank one, bank two, it'll tell you which side of the motor is running.
Sophisticated sucker.
Yeah.
One of them geeks. One of them geek computers.
Well, it's nice that they can do that for you.
Well, hell really is. You don't have to check all the cylinders.
Right. Well, and if it's something that's on both sides, then
it shows you that,
too. You know it's a more common issue where if it's on one side, it may be just one injector failed or something
along
those lines or something dumping. But anyway, what we have seen is at times when these high-pressure pumps go bad, they're building such great pressure that they can leak past some of the seals, and where that fuel goes is in the oil.
Uh-oh.
Okay, so when it gets into the oil, it has put fuel in the oil, and the crankcase ventilation system is pulling it back into the intake track and reburning those fumes. Well, it's supposed to be just
won't that make it richer?
Oil. Yeah, that's the thing, is it's supposed to just be burning some oil fumes,
where now
it's re-burning that fuel getting in there and it's making it rich.
Then you get a rich mode then.
Right.
Okay.
So then you have to go and start, you can actually block off the ventilation system and see if that's where it's getting its rich mixture from. And at that point, you know you've got...
Kevin, how in the hell does these motors and these fuel injection systems hold up with that kind of pressure with O-rings?
Yeah, believe it or not.
They must have got the O-rings off of the damn NASA spaceship or something.
Believe it or not, we have very little failure with them. They work extremely well.
Back in the day, you put an O-ring on something and you just slide it from a manual into a female.
Right.
And it had a groove in it and it'd pop in and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
It'd lock up. But now, once you do that now with all that pressure, does it have some kind of locking system that goes around that to hold all of that together?
Well, you know, the way it's put together, they're moving. You'd be surprised at how little fuel volume it can handle. But the pistons that are in these things are small. They're not moving very far, but they're compressing.
In what? Pistons in what?
In the high pressure pump.
Oh, in the pump. Yeah. Okay. The pump.
Right.
Okay.
And that pump actually is moving, creating that pressure on just a very small internal piston in that pump. They're sealed off with O-rings, but it's such a tight tolerance of the clearance on everything that's on that pump. Once you put that O-ring in there, all it's really there is to seal off around that piston. It's such a tight clearance that there's no way that O-ring's
coming out. Well, that's kind of like back in the day when we were building all the high-performance motors and we would O-ring the blocks.
Right.
You know?
Right.
When you build a compression ratio up that a regular head gasket wouldn't work on it,
mm-hmm.
even though it might have a steel circle around the cylinder.
Right.
But to keep keep it from blowing that, we would have to V-cut the block
mm-hmm.
and have it for special depth, and then have a special O-ring that went around that was crimped by, from the head to the block.
Right. Right.
You know, keep the compression in it.
Yeah, and that worked very well for a lot of years on
yeah.
performance motors, and then now they've come up with these head gaskets that do basically the same thing.
Well, they have actually an O-ring built into the gasket now, though.
Right, right.
Ain't that a hoot? So,
yeah,
that keeps you from having to cut that damn block.
And I hated
those cylinder heads.
Yeah, I hated that.
Woo.
Yeah, so that was always
a
pain.
It was so hard to get it 100% accurate.
Right, right, because it had to be perfect.
Right, yep.
It couldn't be off at all, so... It was more of an art to doing that.
But if you didn't do it like that, when you cranked it up and you give it some RPM, you'd blow a head gasket.
Oh yeah,
burn
yeah.
a piston or whatever.
Yep,
I know. We've been there.
Been there, done that one.
Experience.
All right, we're gonna let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back after these messages.
The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The Doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. We did get a text message here. One of our listeners bought an 18 model last year with 36,000 miles, downloaded factory repair manuals. A big difference in the price between two different manuals. One was $99.99 and the other at $29.99, and just wondering why anybody would pay the difference, pay the higher price. And
are they the same though?
Well, the problem is you don't know until you buy it.
Because
they don't let you read it.
I wouldn't think you'd get the same thing for a $29 manual that you get for $99.
And you might,
Would you think? Well, yeah. I guess so, Get it off the internet.
Yeah, yeah, and you might. And that's the thing is, there's going to be price changes, comparisons there.
Right.
If there's... if it's got all the information, there's no way I'd pay the extra.
No, I wouldn't pay the rest
extra
of it
money for it. Of course, like I say, you just don't know, and a lot of these, a lot of the manuals you get, unless you're buying them straight from like General Motors or Ford or Chrysler or whoever, they will give you a lot of good information, but it may not be 100% dead on to your vehicle,
I wouldn't think, unless you're getting it from the factory, mm-hmm. manufacturer, I wouldn't think it would be an identical factory-type piece.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of it is, even like, say, Mitchell On Demand or Pro Demand.
Right.
That we use, for some things around the shop, it has excerpts from a GM manual in there,
right? Yeah,
or from Ford or from Chrysler or whoever. The only problem is it doesn't. It will get you there, Don't get me wrong, but when I'm using my GM stuff. When I get down and I'm looking at this one article, it may have a link to go to somewhere else and then to somewhere else and somewhere else to get you the extra, information that you need. And that's one of the key things to doing this business is you really have to know how to navigate the service information to get what you need out of it,
But a lot of your do-it-yourselfers are technically educated to the point where they can do that, because But then I've seen some people that could read it and didn't know what they read.
Right, right. Well, I mean, I've seen people in this business that can't do that.
Oh, yeah, so, that's I was going with that.
Yeah, but,
you can take two texts and give them the same page and they'll get two different interpretations.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, I will read through it twice before I go, because I'll miss something the first time.
Well, like a carpenter says, measure twice, cut once.
Yeah.
Okay, read it twice and then do it once.
Yeah. Yeah, know what you're looking for, and then once you've done it a few times. And that's the big advantage
at a factory facility.
Right, at a GM store. I have an advantage over the independents for the simple fact that I work on the same cars all the time.
Right, right.
So I see common failures more or quicker than they would.
It lets you diagnose it a lot quicker.
Yeah,
and repair it a lot quicker. So
right. So and even though it's all on a different vehicle, we have a lot of common powertrain systems, like our little 3.6 V6. It's a high feature V6, but we use it in multiple vehicles because it does a really good job. It's a powerful little motor, does a great job. It can be mounted transverse or standard where it's rear wheel drive. It does a great job. So, but I see it very, very regularly because it's in so many different vehicles.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's back like the old V6s that we had when they first come out, and the earlier model V8s. You might have the same engine with a couple of few characteristics or accessories on it that was in 10 or 12 different vehicles.
Right.
Right.
Which
we're going to see that carry over even today.
Yeah. Luckily, the manufacturers have learned, back in the 60s, 70s, I don't want to say the 60s mainly. In the early 70s, like Pontiac had a motor, Chevrolet had a motor. Well, Pontiac had a 350, Chevrolet had a 350, Buick had a 350, Oldsmobile had a 350. But they were all completely different.
Totally different.
Nothing would bolt on from the other.
Right.
Yeah. So they've learned that, and they went through lawsuits over it, trust me, because they went to a corporate motor, late 70s.
Right.
They started putting that Chevrolet motor in the Oldsmobiles and the Buicks.
Oh, yeah. I wrote up on that. Right.
And they may even have the Oldsmobile motor in some of the Chevrolets or something like this. And it was it didn't go over well with the customers that were used to used to. If I bought an Oldsmobile, by God, I wanted an Oldsmobile motor.
If I bought a Chevrolet, I'd bought a damn Chevrolet.
Right. So anyway, and it was a good motor, no doubt.
Right.
But they had some issues over that. But they've gotten away from that as being an issue. They went to a corporate setup to where most of their, the one exception really has been Cadillac, where Cadillac has its own motors.
Yeah, it's basically always had its own motors. If for the ones out there that go way back to these mature ages, can remember when the Cadillac motor was the strongest motor they had, and even they would, if the moonshiners would get them a Cadillac motor to put in their 40 Fords and their 39 Ford coupes,
right,
all to shine with, because that was the baddest thing out there. And then you go to the drag strip, and you'd have everything out there with Cadillac motors in them.
Yeah.
You could just bolt it in, and you had natural horsepower,
It was
so much more.
It was the biggest cubic inch motor that GM built.
Right.
It was the only one that GM had that was a 500 cubic inch motor at one point.
Yeah, it was cheaper to do that than it was to try to go and build and take, something smaller and put a bunch of exotic parts and pieces and everything on it.
Yep. So, anyway, it's, they've come full circle around to where they've gotten away from having individual motors and gone to, even Cadillac now uses that high feature V6 quite a bit. They still have their own North Star version, motor.
Oh, I never did
V8.
Like that motor.
Yeah. You know, it had its issues, but when it was right, it was really smooth, powerful, good fuel economy.
And wasn't that the one that had the starter mounted underneath the intake?
It did have a starter mounted
under
the intake.
That's no damn place for a starter.
I've seen many of those starters replaced because a battery cable was bad.
Oh, I can imagine.
And really, it was just because the double cable, you know, where they were stacked on top of each other at the battery, was not making a good contact right there.
But, yeah, you had to pull a complete intake off of the motor to get to the starter. The starter and the cell motor were both mounted down inside of the center of the damn motor.
Yep. It was kind of a goofy setup, but it worked well.
I think the engineer that designed it was drunk. He said, I'm going to hide this sucker. Let's see if they can find it.
Well, they had two fatal flaws, and one was the head studs didn't reach down far enough, and they did not put a steel insert into the block for the bolts to go into.
Mm-hmm.
The other was just the fact that it used a main cradle, but it did not. I don't know if they didn't use the proper fasteners or what, but it created a leak.
Right.
So
that the one that had the sleeves that sat on a gasket down the bottom of it?
Well, now that was the early 4100 stuff. 4100. That was bad about that. But this one's just, it had oil leaks pretty bad.
Oh, I got oil leaks too, you know.
I guess
that's age.
Yep. I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show. We've come up to the end of our show, but I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. We are going to take off next week because I've heard rumors about there being a pretty decent little ball game
I'm interested in
that I'm going to be watching. So
there you go. And to all of our veterans out there and all of our first responders, we certainly appreciate all of you. Without you guys and gals, this country would be a totally different. I mean, hoorah.